Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it is day 9 of the Australian Open. It's 10:47 p.m. Yes, you heard that right. 10:47 p.m.
Wow.
And you find us in the media cafe, which is utterly deserted. It's giving zombie apocalypse up here, because usually we're up here having our daily salads and sort of mingling or trying to avoid mingling. Standing around waiting for coffees, and it's not like that at all right now. It's very calm and quiet.
Yeah, we've got a bank of 10 screens to my left, to your right, where we're sitting in this little comfy soft furnishings bit, yes, we can see Zhang Xinwen walking down the Walk of Champions and the replaying matches and all this sort of stuff, but there's only us.
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago, only a few days ago, that these 10 screens weren't enough, were they? You'd come up here to get your salad. Matt's not as big a fan of the salads as I am, but
I like the pre-made salads.
Matt likes
less faff.
Matt, yeah, it is quite a lot of faff, and yeah, there's always a miscommunication. No, I wanted that lettuce, not that lettuce. Anyway,
and they insist on putting fruit on it.
Yeah, there's not a separate. It's not a separate bowl for the fruit. Look, the salad bar offering is fantastic, but I would make a couple of adjustments. You have to sort of use a cucumber as a breakwater between the between the fruit, yeah, and the veg elements of the salad.
I'm trying to sneak up with a separate plate.
What I was trying to say. Good gag, David. You usually have a go at me for my Partridge references. We're vibing here.
I didn't make one.
You did.
I did. Well, accidentally.
Accidental Partridge. What I was trying to say was this bank of 10 screens.
Which is actually only 8 screens.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure where we got 10 from.
It was quick maths.
8 screens. Anyway, folks, I will get to the not even particularly interesting point eventually. A few days ago, it wasn't enough, was it? You'd come up here for your lunch and be like, oh, well, I have to eat it at my desk because they're not showing the match that I need to be following.
No, but day one, nothing enrages me more than when all of these 8 screens are showing the same match.
They do that, don't they? Why do they do that?
It's like there's literally play on so many courts and we're showing one match 8 times.
Anything else anyone needs to get off their chest before we move on?
These are very tennis insider problems, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a massive storm at home. Everyone's fences have come down. People have got holes in their roofs, and people are getting their tiny violins out for us. Zhang Xinwen, actually, that you mentioned, we've just watched her walking off Rod Laver Arena down that Walk of Champions. She'll be coming into press shortly. It was actually her that I wanted to start off talking about, really, because we've had all our quarterfinals set today, the final ones on the men's and women's side, and she's in them. She will face Anna Kalinskaya in the quarterfinal. She's in this half of the draw, which has been utter carnage for a few days now, and the carnage continued today. That top half of the women's draw is just utterly decimated. And Zheng Qinwen, having only ever reached one Grand Slam quarterfinal before in her life, and that was at the last major, at the US Open at the end of last year, she found herself tonight in a position, and continues to find herself in a position, where she's in the fourth round of a slam, and she's the favourite to reach the final.
Wow.
Every match she plays now, she's expected to win, and yet, if she keeps winning from this point onwards, it's going to be very much mining new territory for her. And usually a young player, even an extremely talented and promising young player in her position, is given sort of the grace of having the unexpected run and the, oh, how far can she go? This is all a big, big bonus and she's ahead of the curve and all of that. She's doing it in a completely different position of, well, look at that draw. She has to reach the final now. And that's quite a big deal for her, especially given the whole Li Na of it all. She was asked just now about Li Na's presence here and meeting her for the first time a couple of days ago, and that glorious moment where Li Na surprised her that's gone viral on social media, and she said that Li Na had given her some very useful advice, which is just to try not to think about it all too much and just to play, which obviously is excellent advice, but also obviously is incredibly hard to carry through. But look, the match she played tonight, was there's not much to report from it, really. 59 minutes against an injured and just totally inferior opponent in Océane Dodin, 6-love, 6-3. But I do find the position that Zheng Qinwen finds herself in right now completely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been very easy despite the opponent tonight for her to come out and freeze. This is, as you say, this gaping opportunity, and so many people are now looking at her. She has got real star quality. She's got champion-like tools. She feels like somebody who's going to be something, and has done for a while, but went a bit off the boil for a year and looked lost, really. And then she worked with Wim Fassett, and then there was the fallout. But then she started to really put it all together and looked the business at the end of last year and at the start of this year. And she's carried it on to this event. And on that Rod Laver Arena, I was a few metres away from her in our commentary box, ground level. She just looked like she owned the place in a very, not in a sort of arrogant way, just in a I belong kind of way. And I think she has got it in her to do what she's favoured to do. I think the one player that makes me wonder whether there could be a spanner in the works is Linda Noskova. But I'd still expect Zheng to go through.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point about the pressure that she's facing here. But you would rather have it this way round, I think. Like, I know she is facing that pressure, but this... she's got to tell herself that this is a good situation that she finds herself in. Like, this is a dream draw. And I know that obviously that comes with its own pressure, but you know, she's up against people who are sort of thinking the same thing, that it's an opportunity for them, and they've not got the experience either. Like,
she's got more than them.
She's exactly, like, I can see how she would be feeling a lot of pressure, but she's got to grab this opportunity as what it is, and I think she will. Today was a good start for that. Like, as bad as Océane Dodin was, and it was a bit of a horror show, let's be honest,
bad.
Certainly in the first set, Zheng Qinwen was on it immediately, and she'd had some pretty, you know, close matches so far. She'd lost a set in a couple of rounds, but this was ruthless and efficient, and that was really impressive.
She'll play Anna Kalinskaya in the quarterfinals in a couple of days' time, who, of course, benefited from the ultimate good draw, beating Jasmine Paolini today in two straight sets.
That
is that
upset.
Gag over now?
Is yes, that... I think it is. But I tell you what, that is an upset. I didn't watch the match. I remember I walked past both players in the preparation area down below, and Jasmine Paolini went bounding past and looked like she was just on a mission to go and take her out. And I really thought she would. And she lost heavily. I mean, it was, I think, 6-4, 6-2 or something like that. And I was commentating on another match at the time, so I can't tell anything about it. But I know I'm surprised because, well, she had the opportunity. I mean, I wonder what she's thinking now.
She's thinking this was still an incredibly good tournament, I would have thought. But yeah, I mean, look, this opportunity, this word opportunity is just... It's hanging over the women's draw, and it was at the start of today. It is even more so at the end of today, with Victoria Azarenka going out, with Alina Svitolina going out. We'll come on to talk about this in a moment. And Azarenka, actually, after her loss to Diana Yastremska earlier, she was asked about whether she feels there is extra tension floating around in this half of the women's draw because of how much opportunity there is, because of how much it's opened up. And she said, yep, there is.
Wow.
And you'd have thought that she'd be the one
who
sort of be able to deal with that. You know, I remember a couple of nights ago when we were thinking who's going to come through this top half, we all instinctively went with sort of experience, players who've maybe been there and done it, in Azarenka's case, or at least been to latter stages of Grand Slams, in someone like Svitolina's case. And yeah, that, well, we were wrong in Tennis Podcast Shocker.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what Azarenka was trying to say as well, that she expected that to be an advantage that she had over everybody else. And it just wasn't. Today, the Victoria Azarenka that I watched beat Yelena Ostapenko in the previous round simply did not show up today. It was like, I don't think there was a single ball she struck today that looked as well struck as pretty much every ball that she was hitting a couple of days ago against Ostapenko. She made life hard for herself by not serving well. I mean, that was so notable from how she played against Ostapenko. But off the ground, I mean, every shot just sounded like a bit of a miss hit, or certainly not a sweet connection.
That's how it looks from ground level. Yeah,
yeah. It was weird from Azarenka. Yeah. I thought,
and you know, she was so pumped up. The way, I mean, she carries such presence when she walks out there, and she was a break up, I think, twice in that first set. She was 5-4 up in the tie break. And then she was 3-love up in the second set.
Point for 4-love.
You know, this should not have happened. I mean, Yastremska's having a good tournament, and I felt she was pretty fearless out there in terms of, by contrast, she went for it. But I'm still really shocked that Azarenka didn't find a way today. She looked really stressed, like just pissed off. She looked, when she lost, what was it, 4 games in a row in that second set, she turned around and she just started clenching her fist between games, like, come on. You could feel the opportunity. It more makes sense now.
She was trying to force it, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She was like, how can I not be showing up? How can my game not be showing up now?
In Australia.
In Australia, in these circumstances, how can this be happening now? And how can I not have control over that? How can I not be able to make it happen? And that just must, that feeling of impotence and helplessness must just be ghastly as a tennis player. But I did expect her experience to win out today, and generally in this top half of the draw. And I did not account for Diana Yastremska. I'm a little bit of fighter, in the words of Yastremska. She was overpowering Azarenka today. You know those performances that we've seen from Azarenka where we've wondered, gosh, has the game just moved on a little bit from her? She looked underpowered today. Yastremska was the one with the weapons and the aggression. And it was an incredible line in her press conference where she was asked, of course, a lot of the press conference focused on her being a Ukrainian player, and with Svitolina going out today, she is flying the flag for Ukraine. In this half of the draw, there's obviously Marta Kostyuk as well. In the bottom half of the draw, she plays Coco Gauff tomorrow. But those two are a real story, and she's quite happy to talk about being a flag bearer for Ukraine. So that was a big topic of conversation. She was asked, what will people think back home of your win and your run? And she said, yeah, they'll be really proud of me, but they'll also wonder where I've been for the past few years with a game like this.
Great quote.
I thought it was an amazing line. She said she's really felt the pressure of being a talented youngster. And she's, I don't think she was making accusations about external pressure. I mean, she's obviously aware of external pressure, but she was mostly talking about internal pressure and how much she's placed on herself. And she said she really tried at the start of this year to relax and try and shake all that off. And that seems to have worked.
She has a dynamite game, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. It's a streaky game, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it does seem to either be on or off. Quite impressed looking at her qualifying results here. Like, those were the hard-fought matches. Those were the ones where she was dropping the sets and having to come through against, you know, far lower-ranked players. She's actually come through the main draw pretty convincingly in all of her matches. I think she's only dropped the one set in the main draw. And yeah, like, she can hit so many winners. She can overwhelm you, and she did that to Azarenka. Exactly as you said, you know, I always think of Azarenka as a power player, the one who likes to get on top of the rallies, and that just wasn't happening today. And you know, I think that's partly on Azarenka, as you've described, but it also says a lot about Yastremska. And yeah, I mean, we've probably been wondering that same thing in terms of where she's been. You know, I'm sure if we went back 4 or 5 years, Yastremska, I feel like she emerged around a similar sort of time as Iga Świątek, actually.
Yeah.
Sort of 2019, that sort of period. I'm sure we would have really talked up her game. And yeah, it's obviously been difficult, but this has been an incredible run.
And just a little newsletter teaser,
please.
Oh,
for
yeah.
You.
Now we're talking.
The fact of Diana Yastremska being a qualifier into the quarterfinals, I don't want to give the game away too much, but I will say that Matt's stat today pertains to that fact, and I've never seen him work so hard on a stat.
No
don't
way.
Make it all for nothing, folks. Subscribe to the newsletter.
Hold on a minute. We've done probably about 300 newsletters in the last 4 years.
He wanted the tennis to finish later, so to buy himself more time to finish the
so
stat. He was rooting for a Dodan fight back.
Screw the curfew.
You've definitely done 300 odd stats, and this is the hardest you've ever worked.
Well, that's my take anyway. It's got to be up there.
It's up there for sure. It is up there. I had to trawl through about, I don't know, 150 different draws.
Oh, what?
There was
something like that.
Where was this happening?
A spreadsheet was
all
sourced.
Day.
A spreadsheet was sourced from the ITF. Things were happening.
You did go quiet for a while on the old WhatsApp.
So yeah, do subscribe to the newsletter, folks. I am absolutely certain that stat will not disappoint.
And he had time to watch the Buffalo Bills. Where's all this gone?
We weren't going to talk about that, David.
Sorry.
Tough day.
Speaking of tough days, thanks for the segue, Matt. Alina Svitolina. Gosh, what a downer this was. Let's just get it out of the way. Walked on court. I think she said she felt a bit of stiffness and pain before walking on to the second court today, but kind of put it down to, you know, the stresses and strains of being in the second week of a Grand Slam. Didn't think too much of it. And in the first game, her back spasmed and completely locked up. She said, "It felt like someone shot me in the back."
Oh,
and
I feel so sorry for her.
Instantly looked to be game over. She struggled on for a couple of games before the inevitable happened and she had to retire. And it was clear she did very well to come to press because she was in pain. She kind of was moving very stiffly and awkwardly, and she's another one. She knew the opportunity that this was. She knows she won't get a better chance than this to reach a Grand Slam final. That doesn't mean she'd have taken it if she was fit. Doesn't mean she won't get another chance, but she won't get a better chance than this one. And it's just heartbreaking for her. It's heartbreaking for us because I think we're all in on the Alina Svitolina story, aren't we? Not just because of the Ukraine of it all and the coming back from childbirth, but also her remodeling her game.
Yeah,
that's just such a brilliant story.
I love somebody reinventing themselves game-wise, especially because usually that means they've added and become more ambitious and aggressive. That you don't usually go the other way.
It's a good point, actually, isn't it?
When was the last big hitter you found out was doing shuttle runs at the back of the court?
I've decided to just hit more rally balls down the middle. Yeah, it's just gutting for Svitolina.
Yeah, it was just a horrible moment, and it was sort of double-edged in terms of what I found really just such a shame about this is that we didn't get to see Linda Noskova in the environment of trying to back up that big win. You know, that was something I really wanted to try and find out and learn about her, and unfortunately, you know, it just wasn't a match because obviously Svitolina had to retire so soon, and that was a shame as well. You know, I was really looking forward to that aspect of the match.
We still can't answer anybody's questions about Linda Noskova. We have no new data points, and the questions are still coming.
I don't have a data point,
but you have Noskova.
I have an anecdotal point.
Please, David.
I know what she has as a telephone screensaver.
Ooh.
It's her standing.
Please be a dog.
It's her standing next to Lucy Hradecka at the net when they're about to play Serena and Venus Williams at the US Open.
Oh, that's excellent.
Oh, that's very
because
good.
Because she is a super fan of Serena Williams. And her eyes glaze over when you ask her who her favourite player is, and she gets to talk about having walked out onto the court against Serena in doubles and Venus. I mean, really, it was really lovely actually, because she's quite reserved, quite, I don't know whether shy is the right word, but she's quiet. You know, she's quite serious and not like Mira Andreeva dropping one liners all the time and all that sort of thing. But really nice, and really she was really trying to give a good interview, not that experienced, I didn't think, at them. But then when Serena's name was brought up, you just saw the kid who loved tennis and fell for Serena Williams and just watched every match she played, and then suddenly got the chance to play against her in doubles. And her agent just said, "Show him the screen." She just immediately got it out. She really wanted to share it.
Wow.
And it was really nice. I liked her very much.
And they won that match, I think. Ended the doubles career of
that's
Serena.
Right.
That was Serena's final US Open match, wasn't it?
I wonder how long that lock screen will remain. It's always a difficult moment when you get over the sentimentality of what's been a great lock screen photo, but sometimes it's just time to move on, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the other thing is that she's obviously had this win now over Iga Świątek. Obviously, that's the biggest moment of her singles career. But she was at pains to say there'll never be anything quite like this moment, because this was something that, you know, you can't replace that. I do get the feeling that she believes that she can go further here. You have to believe that, but I get the sense that inside her, she thinks she's got the game. And yet she's not shouting about it. She's just got this quiet confidence that comes through. I think you mentioned that when she was playing Iga Świątek.
The announcement, Kim Wen-Jeng will be in the main interview room at 11:45.
Okay, good to know. Noskova, I think this is a confident player. You don't go and beat Iga Świątek on a big court unless you've got confidence and self-belief. It's going to be fascinating to watch how all of these players deal with this new scenario.
Yeah, Yastremska Noskova, Zheng Kalinskaya. Those are the court. One of those is reaching the Australian Open final.
I mean, that, like, if that was first round matches in a WTA 250,
yeah,
you'd be like, oh.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Decent draw?
Yeah.
It's wild.
It really is
it's wild. Like, when you're in it, like, it feels wild. But also, it's sort of, I don't know, it sort of makes sense because, I don't know, you sort of just go along with it, don't you? But if you actually take a step back from this tournament, it is insane what has happened in that top half.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you, you've kind of got this great contrast to the men's, which have had a kind of, well, not kind of, a relatively quiet week so far in terms of upsets.
Yeah, and I just walked past the ITF stats guy on the way to this podcast who gave me another one for this show. The 1984 French Open men had the top 7 ranked players and the number 11 in the quarterfinals. This is the sort of best ranked quarterfinal lineup other than that in Open era history. We've got the top 6 and then the number 9 and the number 12.
Wow.
It's the complete opposite of certainly of the top half of that women's draw.
Yeah, it does feel like an increasingly crazy contrast. We still could end up with a, you know, Sabalenka Goff semi-final and one of those two against Zhang Qinwen, and you know, it could end up still being a real headline blockbuster final, but right now it feels like absolute carnage, doesn't it, in the women's.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Just before I get on to talk about those men's matches and moment of the day, which definitely wasn't from a tennis match, I'm going to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. We're thrilled to be sponsored by On Location throughout the Australian Open. And as we've been telling you, they offer ticket, hospitality and travel packages for all sorts of things. We've been telling you about the Olympics. They also offer all those packages for the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, Miami Open, Madrid Open, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, US Open, Laver Cup, pretty much everything, folks. If you want to go to tennis, then On Location are your people. And we have a 10% all. Going to pass on that. We have a 10% discount code for Tennis Podcast listeners on 2024 Roland Garros official VIP ticket packages, courtesy of Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours. And of course, those packages include tickets to the tennis, brilliant tickets to the tennis on Philippe Chatrier Court, but also access to La Mezzanine at L'Orangerie.
You're saying that well. It's a good job I'm not doing that read, isn't it?
I like saying it. It's one of the best French words, l'orangerie, I think. It sounds lovely. It sounds like a quintessentially French experience, watching tennis and then going to eat some lovely food and drinks and cocktails in an orangerie. Sounds good to me. And there's a 10% discount code available for tennis podcast listeners. The discount code is Clay Season, CLAYSEASON. You enter that at checkout on the webpage toursfortennis.com/podcast tours, the number 4 tennis.com/podcast. That discount code is for Roland Garros and it's available for all tennis podcast listeners. We also have a 5% discount code which is applicable to all on location tennis events besides the Olympics. So as I was saying, Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, Wimbledon, US Open, Laver Cup, which is in Berlin this year, great city. That discount code is exclusively for friends of the pod. So yeah, if you're thinking of becoming a friend anyway, and there's lots of other reasons to do that, there is also that 5% discount code on travel packages for all those wonderful tennis events. Terms and conditions apply. Now, with the men, I'm going to start off not with the tennis. I'm going to start off with a Jim Courier, Daniil Medvedev moment that provided us a lot of joy in our day today.
It sure did, and when I saw that Jim Courier was going to interview Daniil Medvedev, I think I said, oh, this promises much, and it delivered and then some. It was an all-time great on-court interview. It was interactive, which we've never really had before. I mean, actually, I did see Jim Courier interview Jannik Sinner the other day, and he asked Jannik Sinner to get his racket out of his bag, and they started talking through his racket. But all due respect to Jannik Sinner, Daniil Medvedev was the right person for the interactive interview because he took the mic and delivered a masterclass.
A demo. They went on a walkabout. Yeah, it was absolutely sensational. Now, David, you were watching this from your Five Live commentary position, which is right at the back of the Rod Laver Arena. So presumably you were watching this happen sort of inches away from you and yet couldn't hear what they were saying because you were commentating on another tennis match at the time.
Correct. I'm looking forward to finding out what happened because I could see there was shenanigans going on, but I didn't know what they were.
They were having a very in-depth chat about Daniil Medvedev's extraordinary return of serve position, which is sort of on average, I think I heard them say on the Channel 9 coverage earlier, 5 metres behind the baseline for a first serve.
He's closer to us, where we are in the back of the court commentary box, than he is the baseline.
And he was asked by Jim Courier to talk about the evolution of this happening in his game, because he didn't play like this throughout juniors, and it's got more and more exaggerated as he's gone on. And he said, well, my return from a normal place is not that good. So he thought, maybe I should do something different.
And he cited a very specific match against Joe Wilfried Tsonga where he realised this.
Yes, it's Joe Wilfried Tsonga catching strays on the court where he had his best ever result. he decided maybe I should do something different. And he said the best thing about returning from back here, he said, what's good is from here it's very hard to hit it out. because it's so far away from the court.
I mean, like, it's also really hard to hit it in.
Yeah.
From all the way back there.
Yeah.
I would have said.
Jim Courier did kind of point that out. And then Jim Courier said, but what if someone hits a drop shot and you're back there? And he went, it's a problem. And then he started giving us in-depth analysis on his final against Carlos Alcaraz in Indian Wells. He said, yeah, it's a problem. See my match against Carlos Alcaraz at Indian Wells, where I had my pants pulled down by Carlos Alcaraz's drop shot, basically. And he said, then I went to Miami and everyone's going, well, the thing to do against Daniil Medvedev is to hit the drop shot against him. And he goes, the thing is, if your drop shot isn't good, I'm going to win the tournament. It was awesome, wasn't it?
I loved it so much.
Mm.
Like, the perfect interviewer and the perfect person to be answering those questions. It was just a dream combination.
And it was elaborated on in press because, I mean, there weren't that many people in there. There was quite a lot going on at the time. I was in the right room, folks. That is not that is not fake news.
Evolution.
But myself and a couple of other journalists were kind of wanting to pick up on and get him to elaborate on things he was saying in that interview with Jim Courier. And I asked him whether he's ever prepared to compromise that return position, and he said yes, depending on the opponent. He said, I'm not desperate to do it because I do think that's where I return best from, but he basically said, I'm not too proud to change it. And he did say, in fact, I think I should have changed it against Djokovic in the US Open final, and I didn't. And that's a bit of a learning that he took from that. He talked about his head-to-head with Hubert Hurkacz, who he plays in the next round. He knew all about that head-to-head, knew that he'd had problems with him that he played him. It's 3-2 in Hurkacz's favour, but Hurkacz has won the most recent two, which on a hard court, you know, Medvedev's a hard court specialist, mm-hmm. That's surprising. It's not surprising that, you know, Hurkacz is a top 10 player, isn't it? It's not surprising that he would be capable of challenging Medvedev, but it's surprising to me. And I asked Medvedev why he thought it is, and he went into a lot of detail about exactly why Hubert Hurkacz's serve is so good. Because my question was, there's plenty of other great servers out there that you don't have that kind of trouble with. Yeah. What is it about Hurkacz? And he said, it's the combination of the power and the placement. And he said, that's quite rare, basically. And he said, the only other person he kind of put in that bracket was Novak Djokovic, actually. He said it's not quite as hard as Hubert Hurkacz, but it has beefed up in the last few years, and the placement, the precision is just about as good as anyone.
That was a point that I forgot to make after the Djokovic Manorino match yesterday, was how many more aces and how much easier it was for Novak Djokovic to hold serve against Manorino than Ben Shelton. And we think of Ben Shelton as one of the biggest servers, best servers, but the fact that Djokovic hits his spots just makes all the difference. Like, Shelton's serve was huge, but Manorino was able to get his racket on it, as we talked about, and deflect it. With Djokovic, like, they're good big serves, but they're in the corner, and it's like increasingly difficult, I think, for players to get that back. So that's interesting that Medvedev sort of pointed that out alongside Hurkacz, who's, look, his serve is awesome, isn't it?
Mm. He basically said, I'm preparing for tie breaks.
Yes.
Hurkacz was good today, wasn't he? Three sets against Artur Kazul. I think two of them tie breaks.
Yeah, the first two sets.
So, look, as you'd expect, he's going to play tie breaks against pretty much everyone, isn't he? But we've seen him fluff a few tie breaks in big moments, haven't we? I'm thinking of Djokovic at Wimbledon last year. I know that's the toughest task, Djokovic anywhere, but he played so well for three sets, didn't he? Gets himself into tie breaks and then just his forehand crumbles. So, look, it still could happen when he comes up against the best, which, you know, it's going to be a step up for him against Medvedev. But to have that tiebreak muscle memory in him from the tournament so far, it's got to help.
Yeah, I'd say so. And also, I think I don't know whether we've given Hurkacz a bit of a pass, really, in the past for his Grand Slam record. Like, this is his first ever Grand Slam quarterfinal on a hard court, you know, like, and you think of the results that he's had on the tour.
This is a Miami Open champion.
Yeah, he's completely underperformed.
Yeah, it's a big underachievement
at the Slams, and I think probably he gets a pass because we never really expect him to win it. So when he goes out, it never really feels like a massive deal. He's not sort of one to really talk up his own chances. He's not sort of, yeah, he just exists in this sort of slight bracket of his own, I suppose. And finally, he's come through the first four rounds of a slam. Obviously, he's reached the Wimbledon semi-final, but only one. And this is by far his best slam result since then. So, you know, credit to him for that. And he's sort of unlike, you know, Rublev, we say, he's got a bit of a match-up problem with Sinner, we expect tomorrow. We expect Fritz the same with Djokovic. Like, he's actually got a match-up that he likes here, Hubert Hurkacz in Medvedev. Like, if he was playing any of the other top four seeds, I think we probably would say he's got very minimal chance. But actually, the way the draw's fallen for him is sort of favourable. So I think Medvedev's probably got his work cut out based on that head to head.
And he was good today overall, Medvedev, against Nuno Borges, except when he really wasn't. He did something really calamitous at the end of the third set, just as he was about to cross the finish line, and I don't quite understand what happened.
No, it was bad. It was really bad. I mean, he stopped being able to serve. He just kept serving double faults. He was really sort of ratty with his box during that period of the match as well. He kept doing this thing of wanting the balls delivered to a certain ball kid, which I have seen players do, and I've maybe seen him do it a little bit before, but he was doing it all the time. It was sort of a bit obsessive and weird. And he just lost his head. He lost five games in a row, had a couple of match points which were well saved by Nuno Borges, but just a really bad patch there from Medvedev. And he said afterwards he was feeling it physically, didn't he? And he felt that was maybe a little bit of the reason why. And
I wonder
he was,
why. I mean, I never think of him as struggling physically.
Well, I think it's still that the five set 7 a.m. to bed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he said, look, I felt fine before the match and I felt fine for most of the match, but then I got into a tight spot and suddenly I was feeling it. Like, I think when he's okay, it's not an issue, but when he's not okay, he suddenly remembers that a few days ago he went to bed at 7 a.m. and...
Can relate to that. I
mean, yeah.
even with not playing tennis, but the hours we keep, some days you just think, why don't I feel so good?
Yeah, he said, I just hoped it would not be five sets, and I'm very happy that it was not five sets. So, yeah. He was asked by Courier, are you back to normal? And he said, I was pretty dead, to be honest, at the end of the third set. So, but he, you know, he's not, I think he'll be fine physically in a couple of days' time, and whatever the outcome, I don't think it'll be the most physical of matches. So Medvedev against Hurkacz, and the other quarterfinal that was set up today is Zverev against Alcaraz. Zverev, five sets, deciding set, 10-point tiebreak against poor old heartbroken Cameron Norrie right now, who played good enough tennis overall to win, I think. Didn't play it at the right time. David, you watched pretty much every point of this.
Yeah, I thought Norrie was superb. Picking up from where he left off against Casper Ruud, again approached the net more than 50 times, used some clever drop shots, slightly fluffed his lines with a couple of them when it really mattered right at the end. And this was a very similar match to the one that Zverev played against Lucas Klein, where I genuinely felt the other guy was the better player for during the match. And you have to hand it to Zverev that he comes through so many of those sorts of matches. This was the 31st five-set match of his career. He's won 21 of them. I mean, that's, you know, for somebody of his age, that is a heck of a lot of five-set matches. I mean, and I think that's been a big problem for him. He gets himself involved in far too many epics. I don't actually think he's playing very well at the moment. I mean, his forehand was a disaster for most of the match. He actually pulled it together in the fifth set, but he hit 40-something errors in the first four sets from the forehand, half and half, forced and unforced. But, you know, Norrie just knew he could just target that shot and it would very often produce an error. And I don't see how he gets away with that against Alcaraz. I just can't imagine it. And Norrie, I think I asked him, did you leave that court thinking you should have won? And I think he was a bit surprised by the directness of that question. And he didn't say it explicitly, but I think he probably feels that. But then, like I say, you've got to put these people away, and it's hard to put Zverev away in those matches.
I've got some comfort for him.
Oh, yeah.
If he's listening, Cam Norrie. I got a ping from my dad midway through this match.
Is he on the boat?
Well, 7:56 p.m. local time. I am revising my opinion of Cameron Norrie.
What was it?
What was his opinion of
Well,
Cameron Norrie?
I don't even need to go into details because this is supposed to be a pick-me-up for Cam if he's listening. But I asked, this is a boat-worthy effort, I reckon, so far. This is just as Cam Norrie was taking it into a fifth set. And my dad replied to that, he has a lot of ground to make up. But it gets better. Cam, hang in there. It gets better. So then the chat reviewer said, we'll resume this at the end of the match. My dad's assessment was, he's better overall player than I had thought. His drop shots and net play surprised me, and his angled backhands are a serious shot. That he didn't win is a detail, really. I think he's gone up a level. I said, good analysis. And the boat? I think not. Just, hang on, this is where it... hang in there, Cam.
I'm still waiting for the pick me up.
It gets reassuring.
He's listening.
Just possibly in the future, if he can relax and broaden his perspective, which may come with more success on the court, is something to aim for.
Broaden his perspective.
I don't quite know what that means, but
that feels like quite a tough scene for any tennis players to be on the boat if they need to have broad perspective.
That's true. Yeah, Cam Norrie is absolutely not a particularly bad offender in that field, I would say. He said he can't be doing with the fist pumps. My dad's not a fist pump guy.
I was quite into the fist pumps.
I was too, yeah. I think maybe my dad saw that interview where he encouraged people to call him the Noz dog.
Okay, I'm with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's some of the ground that
makes
to be made
sense.
Up.
That aside, the last two tennis matches Cam Norrie has played have both made me feel things.
I've never seen David so into Cam Norrie. I've loved it.
Yeah, the people David's got into this week. what a wild week.
It's good to be open-minded.
And it will be Alcaraz next, as you said, for Alexander Zverev, who was awesome tonight. What did you do well? Jim Courier asked him. Everything. Thanks for doing our analysis for us, Carlos.
Yeah, everything followed by one of his great big grins. He was ridiculously good tonight.
I increasingly think, bless him, Alcaraz shouldn't actually say anything in interviews. He should just do grins. He did.
Although he should name a woman when asked to name a woman.
Yeah, there was a bad. The interview gods giveth and they taketh away today, because for all the joy we got from Daniil Medvedev, there was a slightly unfortunate name a woman, oh dear, he can't moment for Carlos Alcaraz. He was on the spot, but it wasn't great, was it? It really wasn't great. But his tennis was great.
His tennis was brilliant. But I am still thinking about the interview.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it? But he really did only need to come up with one woman.
Well, they had to be a WTA player, but there's lots of them.
Yeah, I was shouting at the screen, Świątek, just say Świątek, Sabalenka, Goff, anyone. He's done some Instagram chat with Emma Raducanu. He could have said her.
Did he misunderstand what he was supposed to say? Or his role in it?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I think maybe he was just...
I think
he was almost a bit embarrassed.
Let's hope he panicked.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
He knows female tennis players. He does.
Yeah, of course he does. But, yeah. Anyone want to say anything more about his tennis?
I mean, He was just on it from ball one. He's playing Miomir Kecmanovic, who was a nightmare to play against on paper, given their previous match, the fact that Kecmanovic has been playing so well recently. I didn't watch all of it, so I don't know how well he played or didn't play, but it just struck me that he didn't get a chance to play. This was Alcaraz. He often doesn't play his best stuff in the middle of Grand Slams or the early stages of Grand Slams. He often drops a set or he's a bit erratic and it's highlight reel 1 second and then, oh dear, he's dumped one in the net. You're waiting for him to just produce consistently high standard tennis. Not all highlight reel stuff, but consistently good stuff from his upper level. And I just think that's what we got today. There were some wow moments, but it was also just bloody good tennis, solid tennis, winning tennis.
Yeah, there was a one forehand that elicited quite a noise out of Matt. Even in the midst of his newsletter research.
Yeah, I think I was looking at the 1978 Roland Garros draw at that stage, and suddenly I woke up because Carlos Alcaraz hit this incredible forehand. Yeah, it's so audacious, his tennis. That's what I like about it.
Just extra, isn't it?
Yeah, he tries things. Like, it's fun. It's always fun and entertaining. And today, as well, as David said, it had the solidity and the efficiency to it. I thought he was brilliant today, and in that form against a pretty weary, I expect, Alexander Zverev after that effort today, after the effort the other day against Lucas Klein. Let's not forget the United Cup as well. That was a big effort that Zverev put in. I just think he's absolutely there for the taking, and I think Alcaraz will bring it.
Which means another on-court interview for Alcaraz, and hopefully another opportunity to come back and name a woman.
Just one.
he'll do it next time. He'll just give another chance. Tomorrow's schedule. We start with the quarterfinals. The first singles match on Laver tomorrow, 1 p.m. Marta Kostyuk against Coco Gauff. And then here's the surprise, folks. And this was a surprise, I think, for all of us. In the day session, not before 2:30, Novak Djokovic against Taylor Fritz. I think we all thought maybe if Alex de Minaur had beaten Andre Rublev, that de Minaur might end up in the night session slot for his quarterfinal. I think we all thought once the Aussie had gone out, of course it'll be Djokovic. He's done his time in the day session. He's played the one match. He's nailed on for 7 p.m. first night session match from now on. Here he is in the day. What do we think?
I think US ESPN TV have decided to pull rank and say we want Taylor Fritz, our boy, against the greatest of all time in our time zone.
It's prime time California, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I think's happened. And
it's a hot day tomorrow.
Yeah. What did you say the first match was?
Gauff Kostyuk.
There you go. I think that's what ESPN would have wanted. And I think that's what they've got. I'm only speculating, but I mean, you know, they pay some serious money. And because we know that Djokovic would have asked for 7 p.m. He told us the other day, I love 7 p.m. And don't they all? But this is the worst case scenario for him. It's going to be quite warm tomorrow. Fritz is a warm weather player. And if he played his best tennis, it could get physical. I still think Djokovic wins. And probably pretty handily. And listen, if he gets off to a good start, he could roll him again, because he often does, but it's not what he would have wanted.
Very interesting. And it does also mean that first night session slot goes to the women. Arina Sabalenka against Barbora Krejcikova, absolutely how it should be. Pleased to see that match in that slot. And then Jannik Sinner against Andre Rublev, the final singles match of the day. And it's all the singles on RLA from now on, because we're at that stage of the tournament, folks. It's officially the business end, and that's it. It's not even midnight, guys.
Amazing,
we've done it. Day 9 finished before midnight.
I don't know what to do with myself.
Shall I take ages over the mascots and the shout outs just to get us over the midnight finish line?
No.
Okay. I will tell you about them, though. We have Usher, our mascot for the whole of the Australian Open. I was reminded today whilst watching the Bills versus Chiefs playoff game that Usher the human is playing the Super Bowl halftime show.
I prefer Usher the dog.
Oh, it's not even close, David.
Okay, cool. We're in agreement.
I think that's a low rent signing for the Super Bowl halftime show. I think that's a come down from Rihanna, put it that way.
Yeah, but I won't be watching.
You won't watch the Super Bowl
in the middle of the night with no bills? quite possibly not.
Taylor Swift might be involved.
But that means the Chiefs being there.
Have we arrived at a world where I'll be watching the Super Bowl and Matt won't? What's happening?
I think we have.
What's happening in the world? David, Francis.
Right, Francis. What happened today? Oh, no, I didn't win again. Oh, I had a final set tiebreak, Francis. I mean, we almost did it.
Mm, Darwin, we didn't almost do it. Not even close.
That was a good pick, actually, I think, David.
Matt, Hyder and Soma, what did you go for?
We had a retirement, unfortunately. Alina Svitolina.
Tough scene. Just a tough scene. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. There is a picture of Billie Jean on our Instagram stories right now. Do check it out. We have top folks and executive producers Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. Hello and thank you. And we have shout outs, Matt.
We have Isabel Cantin or Contin. And actually we had a Pierre Cantin or Contin very recently. So I'm wondering whether they're related.
Let us know.
Please do.
Isabel Lacey, the British junior that is playing tomorrow.
Yep. That's all.
Open to other offers, David.
I haven't got any.
In fact, Isabel says, my brother and I love tennis. I wonder if Pierre is the brother. After university, he convinced me that taking a gap year to go and see tennis tournaments around the world was a sane idea. So I did, and it was great. That does sound great.
Of course it was great.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Love that. Thank you, Isabel.
Yeah, thanks for being a friend.
We've also got Georgia Hing, who is in Sydney.
Right, Georgia.
Hello, Georgia. Like Matt's brother, sister. Oh, dear.
Hello, Georgia. I don't know whether she gets to the shout-outs.
Let's hope not.
I was about to say Georgia Hall, but that's a golfer, isn't it?
Yes.
That's a golfer.
Yeah.
Georgia... Yeah. Midnight Train to Georgia.
Okay.
It's a banger of a tune. Tell us more about Georgia.
Here's a fun story if you want to share. I guess I am sharing. In the mid-90s, when I was a toddler, we were staying at a resort in the Snowy Mountains in New South Wales, Australia. Part of staying at the resort included the opportunity to have a hit with past tennis pros. My dad was meant to rally with Pat Cash, but ended up playing with Mark Edmondson. My dad recounts that Mark praised his one-handed backhand and also enjoyed a red wine and steak after seeing him tuck into his dinner post-match.
Mark Edmondson, the last male Australian singles champion of the Australian Open.
Exactly.
Incredible. Thanks, Georgia.
Mm. So cool.
And finally, we have Joseph Barreto. We know Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
We know Joseph.
He says, when I was in high school, I appeared on a teen show on public television in NYC called In the Mix. But now I think I would have preferred to have been on a show called On the Boat.
Yes!
Oh, Joseph.
Good work, Joseph.
I'm going to speak for my dad and say you're on the boat.
Yay.
Yeah.
Not with Cameron Norrie, but maybe in the future.
Yeah.
He's on the wait list.
Potential.
Yeah. It's, the rest of his career is just one long audition process.
He did say his final answer to me in our interview was, I do believe my best is ahead of me. So,
right.
Know, there you go.
Show us, Cam. The boat awaits. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you to all of our friends at the Tennis Podcast, without whom we would not be sitting in this deserted media cafe talking about tennis, looking ahead to what should be a cracking conclusion to this tournament. The men's and women's draws are looking so different, aren't they? But they both hold their own intrigue, and we are pumped, or pamped, in the words of Hubert Hurkacz. We are pamped for the days to come. Do join us. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hold up. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.